We all want to be understood, to feel like people closest to us see, validate, and love us sincerely. And more importantly, we want to be that person for others. In order to do so, Studio 5 parenting contributor Heather Johnson says there are four communication behaviors you must always avoid, and she's here to tell us what they are. So let's talk about communicating in families. What do we know about this, Heather?
So first, we know that it is vitally important.
Yes.
Right? It sits at a foundational principle for healthy families. We want good communication, or healthy communication. Let's go that route. We know some other things. We know that however we were modeled communication, whatever that looked like in our house growing up, we tend to take with us.
Mm.
So if that was healthy, awesome. You tend to take that into your marriage or into your parenting. If it wasn't, that's a bummer because that's what we take with us. So we do know we tend to take what we've seen and grown up with, and that goes with us.
Because it's all we know, right? It's all we saw, and we know that modeling is the best teaching.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We also have come to realize and understand that when it's unhealthy, it disconnects people.
Mm-hmm.
It really does disconnect. When it's healthy, it connects us. When it isn't, it disconnects us. There's some other kind of cool things that we've come to know, too. We know that in communication, there will always be conflict. And again, we're using big words, right? We came in with, we must never do these, and we're always going to face conflict. But communication has conflict.
There will always be conflict.
There will be conflict. So instead of thinking of it as bad, because it isn't bad, it isn't negative, even feeling negative emotions like anger or frustration, that's not bad. It's learning what we want to do with them in communication.
I remember a marriage therapist one time saying, and probably, you know, admittedly a little bit for the shock value, but saying something to the effect that if a couple never fights, something's wrong. Hmm. Fights in air quotes, meaning conflict should be present. That's part of healthy communication.
Absolutely. And we actually know that when there's conflict, if we're going to a marriage, when we see it earlier in a marriage, it's actually healthier for longevity because it means that both people feel really safe expressing themselves and talking to
each other,
which is interesting,
yeah.
Opposed to it not showing up for 20 years later when for 20 years everybody's been suppressing the fact that they've seen things different quite often.
Interesting.
Right? We also know that when it comes to conflict in communication, that most is perpetual, which means it's not solvable.
Mm.
Now, we tend to think about communicating not just with a spouse, but with your kids. We think, okay, we're going to have this conversation and we're going to solve it. And then we don't ever have to have this conflict.
It's a one and done, tie the bow and tuck it under the tree. Yeah.
That's not how it works. Most is perpetual.
Mm.
Most is us being in situations where we're not going to necessarily ever agree or see eye to eye. So instead of thinking we always have to solve it, we just simply want to understand how to have conversations through it, with it, around it, to support the differences instead of thinking, I have to solve this so I don't ever have to talk about it again.
Isn't that a little what? Is it discouraging or exhausting or both? But to think of the idea that this conversation isn't going to resolve, that's just an acceptance point.
It is. And we can look at it the other way and go, how cool is it to know that we can be different? And we can hang on to those differences.
Okay.
And we can still coexist in such a cool way.
Good spin.
Because we're going to work on understanding one another.
Fine.
Instead of the fact that we have to see it the same way. Because we won't. And that feels really great. It feels really great to know that I can hang on to, you know, this being this way. And you can hang on to it that way. We can hang on to those dreams and we can agree to disagree in that space.
Okay, as I said before the commercial break, you are one to avoid absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, you're putting four absolutes on the table in the form of four things that should never happen, whether you're communicating to a spouse, as we've talked about, or to kids, or to anyone, right?
Anyone.
Human
to
human. First, you say criticism does not have a place.
It doesn't have a place. Now, we refer to these four behaviors as the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Maybe you've heard that before. We know that, and our research continues to support that these four things, starting with criticism, lead to relationships falling apart, right? And that's why they're so detrimental. That's why we're using that we must avoid them. When it comes to criticism, we tend to criticize, especially our kids, because we think it might be a motivator, right? Criticism is anytime we point out a flaw or a weakness, and we're pointing it out in our spouse or in our kids. And we hope that it'll motivate, right? If I tell you all the ways that you're falling short or doing this wrong, you're not going to like that, so I'm sure you're going to change it and do better. That's what we think will happen. The exact opposite happens because when we point out, for example, walking into a teenager's room and tell them, it's a mess, you are so lazy, or that was such a stupid choice. When we criticize that way, they internalize it and see those words as a reflection of them. As soon as they do that, it challenges if they're enough, and then they feel shame, and shame paralyzes us. So criticism is really interesting because we think it can motivate when really it actually shuts people down.
Mm.
It sits them still, it paralyzes them. we want to avoid criticism.
And a parent's job is to teach and to guide and to model. So where's the correction piece? If it's not criticism, then what is it?
Yeah, for example, walking into a room and saying, this is a mess, you're so lazy, right? Or why are you so lazy? To simply just express with I statements what it is that we're hoping for.
Okay.
I want you to clean your room. I hope that you'll attend to your homework before you go out and play. It's using those I statements that are going to help us make that connection and offer up those things that we hope they see differently without pointing out or labeling or name calling them, which is what criticism tends to do.
Do those I statements then ultimately punch home the positive behavior, as in a clean room demonstrates what? Discipline, or a clean room is, how do you lead, how do those I statements then take us to the human we hope to help them become?
Yeah, that would be pointing out the things that they're doing so great, right? They're not naive to the fact that their room is a mess. And they know full well that there's homework to be done. So again, we can talk to them about doing homework and refer to the behavior that we're hoping needs changed or addressed or looked at without shaming them, without calling them or labeling them something.
Okay. All right.
And that's going to be our big difference, is we're going to speak to the behavior instead of speaking about them.
Okay.
That's what criticism does.
Our producer is tapping her toes at me. We've got very short time left to get through. The last three, I apologize. Contempt is the second one. No room for contempt in conversation.
No room for contempt. What this would sound like, this is when we look at a child or a teenager and we say, are you really crying about this? This is when we criticize from a place of superiority. This is eye rolls. Mm. This is mocking. This is when we tease, but it's making fun of. This is contempt, right? Or when we look at our kids and we say, did you seriously just do that? That's contempt.
I'm so grateful for the definition. I don't know that I would know how to apply that to a conversation or a relationship. Contempt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then when we use those examples, we go, oh, darn.
Yeah.
Maybe that's come out of our mouths where, you know, we have a child crying and it's over what we think is nonsense. And we actually say to them, really?
Yeah.
You're going to cry over that?
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. So we want to, again, avoid that contempt. We can avoid it when we start to see them as people instead of as objects. When we see them with hopes and dreams and good days and bad days and fears just like us. So we want to avoid that.
Stonewalling.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of pet peeves. In fact, I don't know if I could personally come up with a list of pet peeves.
You're a very pleasant person.
If I needed one, this would be it for me.
Stonewalling.
Stonewalling. This is the space where we choose to disconnect, where we disconnect before there's any understanding built. Mm. This is shutting down. This is removing ourselves. This is hindering the other person from being able to have a voice or have a say or contribute in any way.
And circling back to where we started, this is something you could have observed as a child and be practicing and not even be aware
of it. Absolutely, and not even be aware. So this is saying to our kids, we're not talking about this anymore, or you heard what I said, we're done with this topic, I don't want to hear about it again. Mm. It's doing those types of things. It's walking away. It's literally leaving a space. This is all stonewalling.
Okay.
You can only imagine when this is a part of a relationship how quickly it disconnects two people.
Yeah.
And then we have our last one. That's when we get defensive.
I read some recent research on defensiveness and some researchers pointing to the idea that this is what is killing our modern day connection, mm-hmm. human to human, is that we're too defensive.
We're so
even
defensive.
In our interpersonal, not just with the people on Facebook, but with the people that we're staring at every day in the walls of our own home.
So quickly we get defensive. And when we get defensive, then we start to blame. Then as parents, we hear ourselves saying things like, well, if you would have put your stuff away, then I would have been on time.
Yeah.
Or if you didn't make me so mad, I wouldn't have had to yell at you. And now that's defensiveness. Mm-hmm. Defensiveness happens when we decide to make it mean something about us. Mm-hmm. When we make it about us, then we get defensive, right? When we get defensive and we've made it mean something about us, we don't feel comfortable, and so we blame. And remember, blame is just getting rid of uncomfortable emotions. That's what blame is.
Heather, what a good catch point. When I make it about me, that's when the defensiveness creeps
Absolutely.
Into the conversation.
When you feel defensive, when you feel like you have to prove to anyone that you're okay, we've made it about us somehow, right? And our kids put us in these, I shouldn't say put us in these positions, but as we work together with our children, they see our flaws, they point them out, and then we get defensive. Mm. They question what we're doing, and so then we make it about us being enough, and so then we get defensive. And then once that blame happens, we disconnect really fast.
Yeah.
There isn't any room there for us to understand each other.
Yeah.
Same with stonewalling. There isn't any space where we get to communicate and connect with one another. So if we're going to use an absolute anywhere, we want to use it with these four things.
Okay.
Relationships, this is where they go to die when these things are happening.
Criticism,
we want to pull back.
Contempt, stonewalling, defensiveness. Thank you for translating these to the parenting lens. That was super insightful. Heather can help your family communicate better through counseling. You can find her contact information on our website.